Thank you. It is a delight and a pleasure to be here this afternoon. I'm going to disappoint you, though. I'm not going to talk much about humor today. Dan is quite an avid follower of humor and the history of humor, and I know he wanted to talk about that today. But I'm pinch hitting for him today, having come off the bench, literally come off the bench at the Albany, New York airport last night, where I spent 6 hours waiting for a plane. At the same time, Dan was at the Baltimore airport waiting 7 hours for a plane. So I got off the bench, and unfortunately, he's still on the bench. But I did get a message at about 6 a.m. this morning that I ought to be prepared to say a few words today. And since I was already on a flight, this worked out just beautifully. So I'm not going to talk about humor. I'm going to try to talk a little bit about Farm Bill and Farm Bill process and where we're going next. I'm not going to tell any jokes because I have some staff here, and whenever I keep an eye on them because whenever they think I'm about to try to tell a joke, they cause a disruption to keep me from embarrassing myself. I do have a kind of a favorite Will Rogers line that I think is also apropos of our role in Washington, and that is the trouble with political jokes is that they often get elected. Okay, so much for the humor. Let's talk about the Farm Bill, which is not so laughable, actually. Although, if you watched the process last week, you might have thought so at times. Certainly, it did not evolve as many of us had thought and predicted. For many months, we were saying that we thought Mr. Peterson was going to have a terrible time getting a bill out of committee, let alone across the House floor. And he impressed a lot of people, and his ability to get that done, whether it was skill or luck, doesn't matter. He got a bill out of committee. Is it a perfect bill? By no means is it a perfect bill. And it got to the floor with the support of the leadership, and you have to be impressed, no matter what your party affiliation, with the way the leadership managed that whole process, given that there were enormous threats to the process. In the end, if you carefully analyze the bill, you can see why the threats diminished near the end of the process, and the bill ended up getting passed with a very large vote. Now, I'm going to come back to that in a little bit, because one of the disappointments is the partisanship that developed around the Farm Bill, and I want to come back and talk to that issue in a minute. By the way, if you have a question, we're going to take a few questions as time permits, but I've promised we'd try to get you out of here on time as well. So is it a reform bill or not? There's been a lot of talk about reform. American Farmland Trust has been one of the organizations out there meeting with farmers, putting together advisory groups of farm leaders to help design a farm policy for the 21st century. We have a lot of good ideas, we think. A lot of other organizations do. There are significant elements of reform and continuation of the right direction in this Farm Bill. Let me tell you about a few of them, because in all of the sort of hype and then the criticism of the Farm Bill over the weekend, you might not have had a chance to really zero in on what's in this bill, keeping in mind that this is just the House bill, and I'll come back to that in a minute. Now, first of all, the issue that's closest to our hearts, the conservation title of the Farm Bill, is an enormous winner in this House Farm Bill. About $5 billion in additional funding over the 2002 Farm Bill. Almost a 35% increase in mandatory funding, primarily for working lands programs, for programs like the Environmental Quality Incentives Program, the Farm and Ranch Land Protection Program, and others. So the long-term trend in farm policy to put additional dollars and additional emphasis on helping farmers meet the increasing environmental pressure that our society is putting on them continues in this Farm Bill. Keep in mind that prior to the 85 Farm Bill, in 1984, The entire cost share, the dollars provided to agriculture to help achieve conservation goals on land, was less than $200 million a year. It was the old, you may recall the old ACP, the Agriculture Conservation Program. It was $184 million, I believe, that year, but don't hold me to that number. This farm bill will have roughly $5.1 billion a year in mandatory funding. That's the progress we've made on conservation. It's more than $1 billion increase over 2002. And we ought to feel very good about that. That's a continuation of a trend where many organizations, including our own, have tried to make the case that farmers produce more than food and fiber and now energy on their farms. They produce a lot of other qualities and values that our society really appreciates. The open space around our cities, wildlife habitat, watershed management, in the future, carbon sequestration, and other environmental goods. You're going to start hearing the term ecosystem services a lot more. That's the common term being applied to these environmental goods that, well-managed farms can provide. And we'll continue to make the argument in future farm bills and in the implementation of this one that these are farm products. These are farm and ranch products just like corn and soybeans and broccoli and ethanol. Farmers and ranchers produce these products, and we need to find a way to continue to reward them for those products when they do a good job. So a whole new kind of revenue stream, if you will, is in the future for farmers in this country who can be the most efficient at producing those products. Now, that leads me to the one disappointment in the House bill, and that is the Conservation Security Program get almost no additional funding beyond the current signups. We expect when it gets over the Senate, Mr. Harkin will treat that program differently. But we should all be continuing, whether it's CSP or some other version of that, we should all be thinking about a kind of green payments stewardship reward program for the future. And so if there's a disappointment in the House side, is that that concept didn't get very much traction in the House bill. Move on to the nutrition title. The nutrition title, as many of you know, was a big part of the controversy because it was the reason they had to go to the Ways and Means Committee to find another $4 or $5 billion over 5 years. And Mr. Rangel took advantage of that opportunity to get some additional funds in, including funding for McGovern Dole. So there's about $5 billion of funding over baseline for the nutrition programs in this farm bill. Those are pretty big chunks of money that above and beyond what was projected. Energy, renewable fuels, got $2.5 billion. This has been a relatively small part of past farm bills. So again, these are all shifts in the right direction in our view. We're doing things that have real public value and are forward-looking for farm policy rather than looking to the past. Two other areas that are important to note. In addition to nutrition, the whole area of healthy diets took on some traction in this farm bill. And so we saw big increases in the healthy snack fruit and vegetable program in our schools. It's now been expanded to all 50 states. It was a pilot program in 2002. There's what's called the Section 32 program, the purchase program at USDA. There's an additional $200 million a year, doubling of that program to buy fruits and vegetables for our institutions. Those are pretty big steps. The specialty crop community, including the Healthy Snack Program, got $1.7 billion over 5 years in this farm bill. Not just for the Healthy Snack Program, but also for research and pest control and other priorities that they had. If there's a significant new event in this farm bill that's passed by the House, is that suddenly farm bill is beginning to look at all of agriculture instead of just the program crops for what their needs are. The specialty crop community stepped up. They were a very significant force. The farm bill would not have passed the House without the support of the specialty crop community. And then not well-known congresswoman from Connecticut, Rosa DeLauro, stood up and said there were some other things that were important, too. And she introduced a bill about 5 months ago that talked about nurturing local and regional food systems and farmers markets and direct-to-market kinds of programs and value-added programs. Being a part of the leadership, being the chairman of the appropriations, Ag Appropriations Subcommittee, she was able to influence the process as well. So regional food systems, specialty crops, they are emerging new players, and I think that's probably changed the politics of farm policy for the foreseeable future. How that will play out over in the House, over in the Senate, remains to be seen, of course. We're only halfway there. Well, those are the positives. There were some big disappointments in the House bill as well. We think it was a missed opportunity for reform. And when we went out and talked to farmers in 2005, 2006, and asked them about farm programs, many farm leaders told us we need to become a more market-oriented industry. We need to rely less on government for our income and support, and this is the opportunity to do it. Times are pretty good for most agricultural producers. This would be a relatively smooth transition to a more market-oriented economy. House of Representatives couldn't bring themselves to get there, and it's a disappointment that they didn't make more progress on that front. Mr. Peterson and the committee did add a revenue insurance option to the House bill. It is a modest first step in that direction, but we compliment him for doing that because it does suggest that this is an option worth taking a look at. There are important things now to consider as we go over to the Senate, and when it comes to Title I, I don't know what's going to happen. I expect that Mr. Harkin, who's a strong supporter of conservation and nutrition programs, will try to do many of the same things that were done in the House on the conservation, nutrition, and maybe the specialty crop area. They do have a problem now because the House bill is in the neighborhood of $7 to $7.5 billion over baseline. In the House, they came up with that money, as you probably know, through the Ways and Means and other committees. Whether that same dynamic plays out in the Senate, remains to be seen. The interesting dynamic over there is that on the Senate Agriculture Committee are the chairman of the Senate Budget Committee and the chairman of the Senate Finance Committee. So there are some synergies there to maybe make it possible. Last Wednesday, Senators Durbin and Brown from Illinois and Ohio respectively introduced a new bill that we think has a lot of promise. It's called the Farm Safety and Net Improvement Act of 2007, the Farm Safety Net Improvement Act. It is a revenue insurance-based approach. I think most folks who look at the need for a safety net recognize that a revenue approach is a giant step forward from where we currently are with target prices and a price-based approach because revenue incorporates yield. So that if you have a drought or if you have a flood, you don't have to run back to Congress with a hat in hand for disaster payments again. It would be covered by a revenue-based program. We are big fans of that approach, and we hope that over in the Senate, they get it gets a little more traction. Well, that remains to be seen how that develops in the Senate Agriculture Committee, or if it develops on the floor. Just so if you're thinking about how the politics may go in the Senate, I think it's important to note that it's much harder to go to the floor outside of past the committee in the Senate than in the House because of the 60-vote cloture problem over there. The other disappointment about the whole process was the partisanship. For a long time, we've said the thing that's different about farm bills is that they're not partisan, they're regional. This one turned dramatically partisan last Tuesday when the Republicans saw how the additional money was going to be brought into the farm bill through Ways and Means, through the, depending on your perspective, increased tax or the closing of a loophole. So that's disappointing because that changes the way politics and the way farm bills are developed, and I hope that isn't a long-lasting situation. I want to close down here very quickly so we can take some questions because there really are a lot of issues to be covered. If we can get to that next step, I'm confident we're going to do well. We're going to have a farm bill that's conservation-oriented, nutrition-oriented, specialty crop-oriented. But Title I, the commodity program reform, really is the next step we have to make in the Senate side. And it has to be a principled step. There are some important principles with revenue insurance. We can have revenue insurance that's no better than the current system if it simply locks in the politically set prices that we have now. You know, prices shouldn't be set by a dozen politicians in a conference committee at 2 o'clock in the morning in late November for the next 5 years. Prices should be set by markets. And so a market-structured revenue program is very important, one that will allow farmers to look at markets instead of the government for the future of their programs. And so I just add that. The process is not over. It will be a interesting process that will begin right after Labor Day. Mr. Harkin has said, of course, that he will show his hand right after Labor Day with committee markup and then to the floor sometime in October, November. Hopefully this farm bill will get done sooner than the last three or four farm bills that went into March, April, and May. But anything can happen in Washington. One of the last things I wanted to mention, because many of you are from the rural media, we think it's quite interesting that the headline media, the major dailies, made quite a big deal. Almost every major daily, left and right, whatever their editorial persuasion, against the current farm bill and the current farm programs, and it had almost no effect on the vote in the House of Representatives when the alternative bill came to the floor and was crushed by nearly 200 votes. I think it's far more important what you do because what showed in the House was that rural America and the farm community still has a big say in how farm policy is going to be written in this country. And you're the ones that are the not just the opinion leaders but the people who influence their information flow. And it's very important that in agriculture today, farmers across the country are challenged to think about what is the proper farm policy for the 21st century and encourage them to let go of the past, because agriculture is a very different business today. Thank you very much, and I'd be delighted to take some questions. Way in the back. WTO ruling on cotton. Well, as you know, the ruling was leaked, I guess. I don't know if we have confirmation yet today of what the precise language of the ruling was, but of course the next step is that the Brazilians can come after something that the U.S. exports to Brazil. We thought that the trade issues and the WTO issues and the cotton case in particular was going to have quite a bit of effect on this farm bill, and we were surprised that it hasn't. Clearly in the House, Mr. Peterson pretty much ignored the WTO and the trade negotiations, and the fact that Doha has languished hasn't helped that matter any. As you may know, the House Ag Committee rebalanced the target prices and loan rates, which means they raised some and left others pretty much as is, and that aggravates the amber box problem. So whether or not the most respected deliberative body in the world, the United States Senate, will take a different approach to that, I think, remains to be seen. And that's about all I can offer on that one. Yes?
Mike Wilson, Farm Futures Magazine. Where do you think we'll end up on
payment limitations? Well, clearly in the Senate, payment limitations is a bigger issue. And so I would go out on a limb and say that it'll be something lower than the House did. But it's very hard to make that call, because there is a difference between a means test like AGI and a payment limit like the Grassley-Dorgan initiatives of the past. And it's hard to determine sort of which way the politics is going to go on that. But I would say that that there will be much stricter payment limitations than there are in the House bill. And I think that's a pretty safe bet. Yes? Well, the Senate will almost certainly put in some competition language, I think, because Mr. Harkin and others have made it a priority. So I don't know that there's any more to add, because I can't really predict the degree to which that will happen, but it certainly is a priority over there. Another question? If not, thank you very much.